This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from the China Project. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, longtime resident of China, and short people look up to me. My co-host is John Passon, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese grammar wiki, Sinosplice.com, and as his grandpa always used to say, the early bird always gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. Will technology eliminate the need to learn a foreign language? After this discussion, you'll be able to decide for yourself. Guest interview is with Ben McMahon, who studied Chinese in high school, but after being in a coma from a serious car accident, woke up speaking only Chinese. Let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner joining you from Utah, beautiful Utah, up in the mountains out here in the west of the United States.
And my name is John Pasden. I am, as always, located in Shanghai, China. We do not have mountains here, just a few hills like my hometown of Florida, but it's pretty nice in the spring here in Shanghai. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for asking.
All right, so Jared, let's get right into it, because some people have been asking me a question recently. I've heard it from multiple sources, and sometimes it's in the context of like business and will this business last? And sometimes it's in the context of like personal interest and motivation and hobbies. But the question I've been hearing is, you know, with all these apps out now that make real-time translation like an actual possibility that's pretty easy to get and pretty easy to set up, are people just going to stop learning languages? My instinct is to say, no, they're not going to stop. But, you know, I have to give this question a bit more thought. If they're really not going to stop, why wouldn't they if we don't actually need to learn foreign languages anymore?
That's a really good point. And I do come across this issue raised by different people at different times, and I think it's relevant.
I think to really analyze this in like a systematic way, we should look at the different skills separately. So like listening and speaking, that's one set of skills that you learn Chinese for so you can communicate with people face to face. And there are apps now, I think maybe Google Translate does this, sorry, I'm not totally sure, where you can speak into the app and then it speaks the target language to the person and they speak back into it and it speaks back to you. So it's not quite real time, but you can actually have these, you know, fairly normal conversations mediated through a phone.
Mediated on a phone. So, John, what maybe explain that a little bit more.
Well, you talk into the phone talks to them, they talk back to the phone talks back to you. So, you know, you need the phone between you. And maybe in the future, people won't actually have to have the phone out in front of them. Their devices, their technology will be more invisible. But for now, that's what it's like, right?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen these, and some of these, at least this concept of the technology has been around for a little while. It's definitely improved recently. You speak, the software essentially transcribes what you're saying into text. It translates that into the target language and then converts that text to speech. So yeah, this is pretty cool stuff. You know, currently, I think you run a lot of stuff. You got to make sure you have some decent internet connection because it's not run all locally on whatever device you're using. It is cool. Your mileage may vary, of course, how clear you and the other person are speaking, and based on the context, and make sure it's actually understanding what you are saying and then translating that accurately.
Yeah, so in the early days, this kind of technology was a little bit laggy, but it's getting faster and faster. And I think the way that we should look at this when we evaluate whether or not this is going to replace a lot of language learning is just by assuming that it's going to get better and better. We could actually even look at sci-fi movies and see how it works in there and kind of assume that in the not too distant future, we're going to be there. So like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they have the Babel Worm and they just talk and they can understand each other. And even in Ant-Man 3 just recently, they drink the ooze and then they can just talk to each other.
They're like opening their mouths and trying to pour it down his mouth, kind of like Indiana Jones trying to get him to drink that blood or something.
Yeah, it's a little creepy. But the point is, they're not like holding a device in front of themselves. They're just talking, right?
Yeah, that stuff's kind of definitely sci-fi. But, you know, sci-fi is coming closer to reality. Recently, researchers were able to translate some brain waves or tracking your brainwaves activity, whatever, and translating that into text. So, I mean, it's not like word for word, but they were able to kind of track that and understand kind of like the general mood and idea of what people were thinking. So it's like, whoa, hey, we are advancing, and who knows what may be possible in the future.
Okay, so in the next 10 years or 20 years, I don't think we're going to be quite to the point where like no one even knows what languages other people are talking. Everyone's just talking and understanding. I think that's a little bit further out. So let's just assume that it's going in that direction, but it's more like the, you know, I talk, I wait a second, then you talk, I wait a second, and we can kind of understand each other. So let's take a look at some scenarios why you might start to learn Chinese in the first place, and then whether or not it seems like that could be replaced pretty easily by this kind of technology.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, when we're talking about learning language, are these things practical for you? It depends on your use case. What are your goals? What's your situation? What are you trying to do? So I think one of the most common things out there is people who are just traveling for fun. You're a tourist, all right? And so you are deciding you're going to hop on a plane. Hey, COVID restrictions are off. Let's go visit China. I'm going to go see the Great Wall. I want to go see the Forbidden City. There's a lot of other cool places too, but you know, hey, we're going to China. We're going to go have some fun.
Yeah, like for me personally, some countries I've been to, like Turkey, Thailand, like I'll pick up a phrase book just so I can try to use some of the local language and just have a little bit of, you know, interaction that way. But I don't need to do that anymore because I could replace that kind of interaction, you know, pretty basic interactions. I could replace that with apps, right?
Yeah, definitely. This might be a great situation to, you know, leverage the power of these types of apps because, hey, you know, if you're only going for a week, maybe you don't know anyone in your home country or in your neighborhood or anyone really who speaks Chinese. You don't have any really need for the language, you know, in your daily life or any aspirations. Hey, you know what? These things might work just perfectly.
Yeah, I agree. I don't feel like there's a real need to go the phrase book route. I feel like someone like me who likes languages, they might just prefer to try to, you know, get your hands dirty, try to make those foreign sounds with your own tongue and just try to communicate because it's fun. But for people for whom it's not fun, they're not really that interested in that kind of thing. Yeah, why wouldn't they just use the app? It's so much easier.
However, one situation do consider about this is that, hey, are you going to have internet connectivity? Because a lot of these things require to make sure you're connected to the internet. I mean, certainly you can do it, right? But, you know, maybe you're in some places where it might not be as convenient. So, hey, maybe you go back to the phrasebook thing or you decide, all right, I really am going to at least, you know, take a couple weeks and learn how to say some basic stuff so I can at least get around in any situation.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was saying phrasebook, I was thinking actual physical book, which does not need an internet connection. But actually, a lot of people get their phrasebooks now, you know, electronically, or they get these apps that have the same function that can also play audio. So some of those also work offline. So, you know, there's the phrasebook, there's the apps, and then there's the real-time translation. There's like this continuum of choices that you can choose from. It depends on what you want to do, right?
Yeah, so some of the stuff's pretty cool, but you know, there's also I think other similar scenarios. You know, maybe so. You know, the next one I might say is like a business trip. So maybe you have something you're having made in China. You got to go visit a factory, or you're working on a deal or something, or whatever. So you have some business that's bringing you to China. Usually, in my experience, in these situations, you may come kind of like maybe a one-time thing, but you're also trying to develop maybe some relationship, but if you are a non-Chinese speaker and you're coming to China or you're dealing with China in some sort of business environment, your counterparty probably already speaks pretty decent English.
Yeah, and you might want to learn like a word or two, you know, some phrases just to show some respect. And maybe to show a little more respect, you'll spend a little money on the really good real-time translation app. But yeah, you probably have your own team to help you take care of language. But even if you don't, The apps are probably going to do a very decent job for this type of quick business trip.
Definitely. You know, but I will point out, this is I think this is a case now to start actually considering to learn the language, actually investing some time. And the reason I point this out is because I have a guy that I know, he does procurement and sourcing here in the States. And I had a conversation with him a few months ago, and his business, he's had been doing this for almost, you know, 15, 20 years. He sources from all over the world, but, you know, mainly from China. And we were talking just about doing business in China, and he doesn't speak Chinese. And he talked about how they continually kind of have some of these issues and sometimes dealing with their factories and suppliers in China to really kind of think long term and to really be more collaborative in how they're working together to meet their clients' needs and everything. And I told him, I said, you know, I can understand that's a common concern a lot of people have sometimes when in doing some business with China. I said, and I'll say my experience speaking Chinese to them, even having a level of Chinese that you're using to try to connect with them, goes a long way in developing those relationships and goes a long way to helping that counterparty really start to think, and not just on a transactional basis, just like I'm buying and selling something, to actually start thinking like we're a partner or we are working together on this. It's good to bring this up because this might be starting a situation where you say, ah, if I really do take the time to learn the language, it's going to have a real positive impact on maybe what I'm doing for business.
But in this case, is China the only market? They're not like doing business in 20 countries.
Well, these guys are. It depends on what you're doing in regard to source and procurement, but there's a lot of things still that just, I mean, you could get them made outside of China, but most of the industry in the manufacturing base of certain industries are still majority-wise in China.
All right, well, let's talk about that scenario then, because this is the scenario I work with a lot at All Set Learning. A lot of my clients, they're people that they now live in China or they came to China to work. And so it's going to be a year, 2 years, 5 years. They're working with a Chinese team, many of whom speak English, but not all of them. For these kinds of people, it's kind of unimaginable that they wouldn't need to learn the language at all if they really want to communicate and get to know these people that they're working with.
Okay, we're taking that step. You are living in China, right? And primarily, I guess, for work purposes, right?
Yeah.
In my experience, if you are coming to China to work in China, you are still going to be working with Chinese colleagues who speak good English. Unless you're been in China for a while, or you speak very high level of Chinese, you're not going to come work in China and have an only Chinese environment.
Well, there's all kinds. I mean, I don't work with people who work in companies where everyone speaks perfect English and there's absolutely no need to learn Chinese because they have no reason to look for me, right? But I work with a lot of people who they maybe don't need to speak Chinese, but they recognize that there's significant portions of the business that are only in Chinese, or maybe parts of meetings that they're in that are only in Chinese and they can't follow that. And so there are these pockets, right? And they recognize that if they actually speak Chinese, even if it's not perfect, maybe intermediate or whatever, if they actually speak Chinese, then they can get more involved in the rest of the business. They can understand the business better. They can further their career, and it's just totally worth it for them.
And I 100% agree on that. As the scenario I was describing is that if you don't speak any Chinese, you're going to be disconnected from a lot. And I have had Chinese friends who have worked in companies where their boss was non-Chinese and didn't speak any Chinese at all. And there always seems to me, not necessarily I would say spoken, but perhaps just like a feeling of a little bit of, not necessarily resentment, I'm sure sometimes there's people that might have that, but a feeling of disconnect. And I think it would come back to something you mentioned earlier, John, just about respect, you know, just respect for the culture, respect for, hey, being here. In America here, we have people from all over the world who come and move to America. I've met people who've been here for a long time, 20 years, and still don't really speak English. And so you kind of think about that if you in your home country, if you have someone who's been living there like that 20 years and they haven't learned any of your language, what does that mean to you? How does that impact your perception of that individual? I think that goes two ways. So, you know, if you are going to want to go live and work in this environment and you're not taking the steps to really try to learn something, it creates some of that, I would say, less than positive impressions of other people towards you on how you're perceiving their culture.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But to play devil's advocate a little bit, getting back to the whole technology thing, if we could imagine that the real-time translation is a little bit further along, suppose you're in the situation where you're at work, the meeting has switched to all Chinese. So you're sitting there with your earbuds in, you've got your device, you know, next to you. And so you can actually understand what people are saying because your software is good and it's translating everything for you. I still find it kind of hard to imagine you being like, let me interrupt for a second. And then like your phone just starts talking to everyone at the meeting. I don't know.
You conjure my mind like Stephen Hawking, you know, like responding, you know, to a question.
There's a little bit of a disconnect. Actually, the thing I thought of was, have you seen or have you been in the situation where there are a number of people in a room having a meeting, but like there's an iPad on the table and there's like that one guy who's who's calling in remotely.
And like, yeah, there you go.
And he's trying to participate, and it's just like, you can do it, but it's just kind of awkward, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably a really good example there. The guy phoning in.
Right. So you'll be like that guy, only, you know, multilingually or whatever.
You know, and I would even say, even those technologies, I would imagine, wouldn't alleviate some of these less than positive perceptions that people would have towards you if you're in the country and working there for a period of time or a longer period of time, and you're not making any moves or steps to learn the language.
Okay, so that's the business case, right? But what about for some people who have non-tourist, non-business reasons to learn Chinese? So we're talking about people who are learning for family, people are learning to, you know, make friends and talk with other people, possibly for romantic reasons. Could these people achieve all of these goals just by using technology and not learning the language?
Well, John, your wife is Chinese, and let's say she didn't speak any English, and you didn't speak Chinese. And you, how do you think your relationship would be if you used all your communication through an app on a phone?
Yeah, I wouldn't be nearly as smooth, Jared. Let me tell you that. Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine it. I suppose it's possible, but I just can't imagine it being like a commonplace thing.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, this comes down to like relationships, and you know, relationships essentially thrive on real human connection. And so if you're unable to, I think, you know, be accessible, open, you know, or not even open, but just being able to communicate, you know, as a person to person, I think it's really hard to develop relationships.
Yeah, and getting to that family example, can you imagine just going to visit family and you have to talk to all of them through a device? Everything is being translated. Again, you're that guy on the iPad in the meeting, but it's family. I feel like it would be kind of like torture because you're so close to them, but there's like this distance created by language and this, you know, technological wall that is semi-permeable, but like you can't totally connect, right?
This conjured in my mind like the scene of maybe like a Chinese-born American guy going back to seeing family in China and using this app to try to communicate and having the grandma and all his eyes and the stuff while like, you know, scolding him like, why didn't you learning Chinese? What is this? You need to make...
Yes, all of our Chinese heritage friends are always getting flack for that from their family for not being more fluent in Chinese. So if you were to entirely abandon your efforts and just depend on technology, you'd probably never hear the end of it for your entire trip or your entire stay, right?
Definitely, definitely. In a positive family environment, there's going to be like positive communication, and you got this disconnect or whatever. It's not going to build the connection you would have if you can really just speak the language.
I think even in these situations, the technology is going to be useful in a pinch. You know, if you really need it for certain things, sure. But to just be relying on it day in and day out, I think it would definitely create a distance, which is not what you want. I mean, one of the reasons you're learning the language is to remove the distance, right?
Absolutely. That's right. We're trying to facilitate human connection. Well, you know, John, aside from all these things, so I mean, these are definitely, I think, you know, we're kind of going through a spectrum, a scale of maybe reasons why it might say, I don't really need to learn the language, down to, hey, I think it's much more relevant and important to my life. But there's also a host of other reasons aside from, you know, even the, yeah, having any technology available to translate to you. There's a host of other reasons people might want to really learn the language. John, you roll my eyes every time I bring this stuff up, but we did do some research about this about a year and a half ago. But, you know, we found that, you know, one of the most common reasons here was just that people are just interested in learning languages. Like, hey, it's just kind of cool. I like the idea of it. It's just interesting to me. And there's other people just want to, like, have an interest in China or whatever, you know, there could be other languages, right? They're just interested in that country, connecting with the people, the culture, or whatever it is. And there's also people who just like a challenge. Like, they're just like, hey, that's something that's not easy to do, and I kind of like that. And then there's people who are just inspired or something, or it's more of like their aspiration. They say, oh, you know, that person learned Chinese, and I want to be like them. You know, they have a role model, and they, you know, there's something that's why I really want to learn this language, because it's more about like who I am. I want to be a Chinese speaker.
Okay, right. So I get your point. So in none of these cases would using the technology really help them achieve what they're looking for. I mean, there are some cases where people maybe just want to try out the technology instead of trying out learning a language. But again, that's not going to detract from the numbers of people learning Chinese.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's, you got to have your reason. I think, you know, as far as like being in different environments, you know, those can give you more of a reason to learn the language. But if you want to do something, you'll find a reason. If you don't, you'll find an excuse. If you want to learn Chinese, I mean, like I said, all you need is just a reason. And it could be saying, oh, well, I just want to go travel around China for a week next year. Okay, cool. That's a good enough reason. And if you really want to learn the language, your reasons might change over time. And that's okay. Technology, it's great. And it definitely is going to have its place. And thank goodness I don't have to go around and learn every language in the world. But I think at the end of the day, if you really want to take the time to learn a language, you're going to make sure that it aligns with what it is you want to do and you got your purpose and your reason.
And Jared, as you were talking, it made me think of another point, which is if this technology becomes really widespread, really fast, easy to use, then it might be that lots of people, as they start traveling and going to places like China and encountering the culture and the food and the people, that they become attracted to it, just language totally aside, because the language isn't such a barrier because they have their technology. And then they realize, hey, you know, maybe I want to learn this language because I've sampled the culture. Now I really want to get into it. So that could be a cool result as well.
Yeah, I would not doubt that at all. Actually, because of this type of software, I really think we're going to see more people learning languages because they're going to go out and have positive interactions with other people that they wouldn't have been able to have otherwise. And I think that the people, if they're spending a period of time interacting in whatever way, traveling or virtually whatever, they're going to realize at some point the inherent limitations of this technology that we're kind of describing here is just that still you want that human connection. And I think that those interactions are going to give people, like I said, more reasons to learn a language, and their people are going to do it.
Bottom line, you've made the right choice, guys. I think language learning is future proof for the rest of our lives. I said it. You can call me on that in 50 years if I'm wrong, but hopefully I'll still be around.
I'm going to put that in a time capsule. Let's hope that one ages well. All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is
Mandarin Companion, Chinese graded readers. These are easy to read Chinese novels.
Today we are talking about our breakthrough level Mandarin Companion graded reader using only 150 basic characters, In Search of Hua Ma.
So this is one of our very few fantasy / magical realism stories. And this one is for people that are just starting to be able to read a Chinese novel. It only takes 150 characters and you can get into this fantastical story set in China.
So fantastical, John. It's kind of Alice in Wonderland-ish, right?
But it's not so cliche as to have like dragons flying all around and stuff. It's a unique story. A lot of people like it. It's really cool to be able to read something like this as a beginner.
My favorite part there is when he's talking to those one guys and they're like, Nishin ma da ma ma ma. Haha, I love that part.
Of course you do.
So you can go out and get it today. It's In Search of Hua Ma, our Mandarin Companion Breakthrough Graded Reader, using only 150 basic characters. You can go and find it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, or wherever you get your books.
Check it out and let us know what you think.
All right, we have a few listener reviews, comments, and questions, John. So let's get to it.
Okay, so this one is from David Belkazar. I really love when you talk on this topic. Comprehensible input is what has kept me motivated in my Mandarin Chinese learning. Awesome. Comprehensible input. Yeah, well, that was, what, two podcasts ago? Thank you, David.
Thank you, Mr. Belkazar. All right, and we have our next review from Angelus321. Love it. Previously, I was just learning new words grammar, and it was difficult to put what I've learned together. Reading stories on my level plus one really helps in this regard. A game changer. All right, we're happy to hear that. Comprehensible input is a game changer.
Awesome.
And it turns out, John, that we have gotten like 10 comments like in about a week on our YouTube channel that we post our podcast episodes on YouTube as well. We're going to have to try to work through some of these, but they've all got like questions and stuff. I think it might have been like a class or something. It seems like, you know, the teacher said, hey, go do these for extra credit. I don't know. Here, I'm going to go ahead and read one of these. This comes from Jody for how to increase your listening speed on that episode. She says, really great topic to talk about. One of the hardest obstacles I'm dealing with is improving my listening speed. In the first classes of Chinese, it's common for them to speak in Chinese quite slow, which is helpful for the beginning, but if I continued, it can be hard to move on from. Your advice on finding outside resources such as podcasts or videos have normal rate of speech is a good idea, since over time you'll slowly increase your listening skill. My only question is, do you think watching Chinese movies and dramas are a useful resource to increase your listening speed? Good question.
Well, I can answer that. I would say yes, they're definitely useful, but two things. One, try to find something which is fairly easy to understand. Like, don't do one of those, you know, Tang Dynasty period stories. Those are way too hard to understand. Try to find something kind of modern daily life type stuff. So you want the subject matter to be easy to understand. And two, if you just watch the entire thing through, it's going to be hard to catch anything. So you're going to want to loop relatively short segments so that you can keep hearing it over and over again. And it kind of makes it hard to enjoy the story as much, but maybe you watch it once for the story and then watch it in smaller chunks and loops to really get that input and let it, you know, marinate in your brain.
Input marinating.
Okay, so this one's from Ariana. She says, I watched this video after my teacher recommended your podcast. Listening is one of the aspects of learning Chinese I found most challenging and anxiety-inducing. I never thought about how the age and gender of the people I am talking to would affect how they speak and my ability to understand. How should I extend the length I can hold a conversation? Do you have any recommendations on slowly increasing the speed of which I can listen to? Right now, people have to speak pretty slowly for me to understand. Okay, so Ariana, I think maybe you just got to be a little more patient with yourself. I know it's annoying. People have to speak slowly and maybe you're embarrassed, but you really got to have a lot of conversations to build up the familiarity where the speed, you know, can start to increase. You have to have a lot of like the same like, ni hao, you know, how are you? What's going on? You need to have like a bunch of those conversations before it can start to increase in speed. So I don't think you're doing anything wrong. You just got to be patient with yourself and keep at it.
I will add on this, John, is that, you know, what she wants to get to that point is kind of the automatic processing. And that's kind of what we term like fluency, right? But this is a great case for like using extensive reading and graded readers. Yeah. A Manner Companion, hey, it's a great source of that. But really, like the studies show that if you're reading a lot of comprehensible input, so let's say you're getting a bunch of the Manner Companion books and you're reading through a bunch of them and you're increasing your reading speed, that also impacts your listening, speaking, and writing. And so I experienced this, I know lots of other people have too, is that, hey, once it got quicker at reading, your brain just becomes more used to the language. You stop kind of translating in your head and you just start understanding it in Chinese. That simple thing right there, it's not so simple really, but you know, that one thing of being able to stop translating your head and focusing and understanding in Chinese, that goes a long way to improving your listening speed. Because, you know, a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't understand what's going on. So I'm listening and then I'm trying to translate and they're speaking too fast and it's going too slow in my head and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think that might be, it's quite likely that it might be Ariana's one of her issues.
And just in case it's not too obvious, you also can listen a lot more, right? So reading is going to help, speaking more is going to help, but also just getting more of that listening practice, that's going to help too.
You're right. And on that note, a lot of the greater readers, including Manner Companion, have audio versions. So it's like you can also listen to it, which is good. All right, now it's time for rants and raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rave. So I was reminded of a Chinese artist that I haven't thought about in a while. I saw a book of his, which was called Book from the Ground. Di Shu is the Chinese name. And his Chinese name is Xu Bing. And he was born in Chongqing and he was raised in Beijing. Seems like all the artists come from Beijing in China, at least a lot of them. I remember when I was in China and I started seeing his stuff a lot, he became really famous from this thing called Book from the Sky, which was Tianshu. And what he did was he made this art installation made up of fake Chinese characters. So he put all these like components together in a really artistic way. So it looked like a complex Chinese character, but it was totally fake. And he made hundreds, if not thousands, or even millions of these characters. And he put them all into this art exhibit. And as a foreigner who once saw characters and could make no sense of them at all, it's kind of cool to see a Chinese artist doing this so that the Chinese can have the same feeling, right? but he's done lots of cool things with like Chinese characters and art. Like another thing he did was take English letters and convert them into like Chinese looking elements, and then take English words and combine them into a single character looking block so that you have like blocks of English words that look like Chinese. Anyway, he's done lots of really cool stuff. I love his work, and I kind of forgot about him for a while, but he's still going. His name is Xu Bing, and we'll add a link to his website in the show notes so you can check it out.
That sounds pretty cool. It might be a great way to troll your Chinese friends, right?
No, the Chinese know. They're not going to be fooled by that. All right, so Jared, how about you? You got rant or rave for us?
John, I've got a rave today. I had to lean back on something that I love, and we've mentioned on the show, but you know, any new listeners, they need to know about this, because if you don't, man, you're like, you're not maximizing your Chinese capability. And what I'm going to rave about today is Playco. That's right. We're talking about technology, about all these things, translation, whatever, but Playco is like the awesomest Chinese language dictionary app. You know, it's kind of funny. I've been in some of these like language learning subreddits, and I've had people asking, you know, oh, is there any other dictionaries like Playco? And it seems like for other languages, and I the general gist I've got is like, man, we got really good with Playco. It's pretty dang awesome. The dictionary is very robust, live optical character reader. You can point your camera at characters and kind of, you know, will read them. I know Google Translate actually does that too, but you can put an image in there and do that. The clip reader is super good. It's like sometimes I'm chatting with someone in Chinese and I'm like, what was that? I mean, you can, in WeChat, you can have it translate, but no, who wants to do that, right? I take that stuff, I copy it, put it in the clip reader, and I can go and check that character in context and be like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. And they do have flashcard thing in it, but it's not the best flashcard thing, but hey, it's boutoir, right? It's not bad. You know, it can read ebooks and files and PDFs and stuff, and there's all these paid add-ons you can have for it. Some of these things I'm mentioning are paid add-ons. And if you have the Android version, it has the optical reader for like overlay on the phone. So if you're like on a website or whatever, you can click this thing and it brings up this little box overlay, and you can put it around characters that are on your screen of your phone, and you can touch on those and it'll optically read them on your phone. It's super cool. I absolutely love Playco. Use it still quite frequently. I don't know about you, John, but I'm still always encountering Chinese that, you know, is new to me or I forgot or whatever. And just love Playco. So I just had to give that a rave because it just is awesome.
Yeah, I use it all the time. We haven't mentioned Playco in a while, maybe because we definitely mentioned it at the beginning of this podcast. And we're trying not to repeat ourselves, but this one's worth repeating. Actually, I was just using Playco today because I have the animated strokes for all the characters.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. That's a great thing on Playco.
And my son was working on his Chinese homework. He's like, Daddy, how do you write blah, 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 you know? And so what I do is I just find the character on Playco, go to the characters, and it's really big. And I can, like, show him across the room. And he's like, oh, yeah. So that way I don't have to get up. Yeah, lazy. His mom is supposed to help him with his Chinese homework, not me.
Lazy bone dad.
My name is Ben McMahon. My Chinese name is Meng Jianming.
Ben joined me from his high-rise office in downtown Melbourne, Australia, the same city he was born in.
My Chinese journey has been, as in the Chinese idiom, would say 丰富多彩, which is rich and varied. All in all, it's been a trip of fate that has kind of led me to where I am today.
After a severe car accident that left him in a coma, Ben woke up speaking Chinese. Many have written about his story over the years, and while it's definitely a headline that grabs your attention, there is much more to Ben's story. While fate definitely played a role, Ben took what fate gave him and crafted it into the life he has today. Stay with us. All right, well, Ben, why did you start learning Chinese?
I was forced to learn it from my dad.
Oh, your dad.
In our high school, we had to learn two languages. And I had started learning French earlier on. And so naturally that was the first one. Then after that, I was thinking I may as well do one that's fairly similar. And so at the time I was thinking I was going to do German. And then on the day that I had to submit the form, basically saying, you know, which languages that I would study, from the car, my dad asked out, you know, what languages are you going to do? And I said, oh, French. And he said, okay, that's pretty good. And then I said, in German, he said, you know what? I got a feeling that China's going to be pretty big. And so at the time, he's a property developer. And so he had flown back and forth between China a little bit.
Ah.
And they were looking at projects in China, in Chongqing. And so each time he'd go through Shanghai Airport, he'd see more buildings that had gone up. And so he was going, gosh, you know what? This is going to be quite a big country and quite a powerful language to learn. And so after a bit of fight and banter back and forth, I ended up starting Chinese, not out of love or wish to begin. But then as soon as I began, I just fell in love with the idea of characters. That every character was like a picture and had a history and a story, and the character for family, the top of it's like a chimney and the bottom is like a pig. And back in the day, you know, had your livestock underneath, kind of maybe where you lived. And so that sort of had a fascination of it.
So the start a little bit under duress, if you will, your father's like, blink once if you're really choosing this.
Absolutely.
Blink twice if not, right? You know,
it was a fight. And I'm absolutely thankful to my dad to at least start me on the journey of Chinese. I don't know whether I'd be here today speaking with you if that wasn't the case. And it was really a flip of the coin moment. Like maybe I'd be on You Can Learn German podcast.
There's still time. There's still time for that. But what was that experience like? Okay, you say you fell in love like kind of with the characters. And I get that. There's a lot of people that love that. The form, the function, the history, the depth of them, you know. But how long were you studying in high school?
A couple of years in high school. But as with any language, when you start in high school, you know, it's an hour or two a week. So you learn that there's four tones and a silent tone. You learn the basic sort of words. Hello, my name's Ben. My family is four people. I'm Australian. It was only after that and finishing high school and then my story kind of takes the next turn that really went to the next level.
Okay, so you got to tell us about this then.
I was involved in a car accident over 10 years ago. It was a really serious car accident. And in that car accident, I was left in a coma and I had serious trauma particularly to the left side of my brain. And after waking out of the coma, my internal monologue was Chinese. I'd spent a little bit of time in Beijing, quite close to before the accident.
I'm curious, how long were you in Beijing?
Probably about 6 months. And that was a combination of backpacking around, traveling, teaching a bit of English, and then learning Chinese.
So you were in China for 6 months.
Correct.
Backpacking, exploring. Was this kind of a gap year for you?
Or? Yeah, it was. So a gap year, and I decided, look, I wanted to spend some time in China after high school. And so there was a strong exposure to the language before this accident. But when you try and get to fluency, you don't want to be translating from your mother tongue into your second language.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened there was that, I'm not sure why, but post-accident was I wasn't thinking in my mother tongue or thinking in English. First off, I was going straight to Chinese. And there was a significant period of time where I struggled to even think in English at all.
Wow.
And so speaking with parents and speaking with friends or speaking with people in the hospital when I was recovering, it was in Chinese. And so it wasn't as like I went from zero to hero.
Yeah.
But it was almost like a skip and a jump and fast forwarded me in terms of forcing yourself not to think in your mother tongue, but just thinking in what was originally your second language.
See, that's really interesting because one of the things about language learning, that we've talked about this a lot on the show, but this concept of automatic processing, and that's kind of what we interpret a bit as fluency. Fluency, I call it an F word, so I like to use proficiency. But yeah, it sounds like that was kind of like a jump, right? That's fascinating. And I'm really kind of interested in drilling down a little bit more about like, what was your Chinese like before the accident? So this had the 6 month exposure. Were you using Chinese frequently, like day in, day out when you're in Chinese?
The basis was there in terms of being able to do basic dialogue and speaking and making my way around China with a combination of speaking and sign language. And that I think is often missed in my story is that I had a solid base. I had a really good base, I guess, to improve on. I've heard a lot of these stories about people that have been involved in serious trauma or serious sort of things, and then suddenly they start speaking another language or their accent changes. But the common theme is that they've all had some sort of exposure to it. It wasn't as suddenly like I was able to speak. You know, I was going from a vocabulary of 100 words to 100,000 words. But
yeah,
it was the fluency, which is the key issue, or the naturalness of how when I'm trying to think of a concept and I'm thinking of an apple, I'm not saying apple, I'm thinking of pingguo. And then from that moment onwards, also my focus on the language intensified as well, because going through such a traumatic experience and coming close to death and then people telling me the story, oh, you woke up and you're speaking Chinese, Chinese, Chinese. Like, once you've had so many people tell you that, you go, you know what, maybe this is fate driving me in some sort of direction. And so after that, then I took up one unit of Mandarin at Melbourne University. And so I went to the most advanced one of that, and then that was pretty easy. So then ended up going on a TV show called Chinese Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the Iron Person contest of Chinese proficiency in speaking and poetry and singing and dancing and acting. But it's got 120 representatives from around the world, which all go on this TV show. And it's pretty intense. Like, over a month, we're filming every single day. But that was 3 months after I woke up from the coma.
Oh, really? Okay, so that was pretty quick.
I'd only just, like, I was still sleeping and quite tired, but the intensity or the adrenaline of being on stage and then being with someone from South Africa and someone from Japan and someone from Germany and someone from all these different countries around the world. But our common language wasn't English, it was Chinese.
Wow. I'm curious to know, what was a bit of your experience like? Also recognizing this was a traumatic experience as well, right? I don't want to downplay that thing. You went through a really difficult car accident, but I guess a brain injury that manifested itself with an almost enhanced cognitive ability, right?
Yeah, I think it's two things. One is clearing, whatever you want to say, clearing pathways. And what I would say the most difficult part of learning Chinese, it's not the tones, it's not the characters, but it's the concepts, because things don't translate perfectly. And you've almost got to listen to a whole sentence of Chinese before you can translate it into English. Whereas, and I don't speak great French, I'm the first to admit that. However, there's a lot more similarities in concepts. Whereas, at least with Chinese, I find you've got to really train yourself to think Chinese before you can really speak it really naturally. And that's through exposure to the language and then just really pushing yourself to learn. And so I think through that process, I was just thinking a lot more naturally, and every day I was streaming in Chinese. As soon as I'd wake up in the morning, I was thinking in Chinese, and I was seeking more opportunities to speak Chinese too. It's a combination of everything coming together, and that I think accelerated me on this journey of learning Chinese. And then I went back over to China and I studied economics and business in Chinese with the local students.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought, well, if you really want to challenge yourself, that's the best thing to do. And I think, as they say in Chinese, so if you want to do like a local do, you got to really go all in.
So it sounds to me that switched your internal monologue, I think, as you put it, into Chinese, but now just everything Chinese became a lot more natural, a lot more easier. So you were to progress also quite quickly.
Correct, yeah. So it became a lot more natural. And then from that naturalness, that was always my first decision to do something. So reading in Chinese, did a small kind of Chinese talk show in Melbourne. But then soon after that, I had the TV show, and then went over to Shanghai to study. And then I was studying at Melbourne University, and I was studying commerce. And a lot of the students that study commerce at Melbourne University are Chinese international students. So I had one class which was quantitative methods too, and my teacher was Chinese and my classmates were Chinese. And so we all decided, well, let's just do it in Chinese to make it easier for everyone.
Wow.
So I think from that stage onwards, that platform helped me accelerate and then keep going and going and going. And like any sort of language, you never stop learning.
I'm sure a lot of people, your story, they want to talk about this accident and everything. But I think for me, what's also really interesting as another Chinese learner, if you will, is what are you doing with it, right? And it sounds like you took this opportunity, and certainly it kind of gave you a leg up in progressing in your Chinese journeys. But it sounds like that has opened up a cornucopia of opportunities for you, but not just opened up. Sounds like opportunities that you've also seized.
I think too, yeah. A lot of stories in the past always just focus on coma, accident, Chinese from zero to hero. And I've always tried to say, well, look, no, there was a basis. It's just accelerated me in that journey. But also it helped me focus in on every minute of every day of what I'm focusing on. And so my original exposure to the Chinese when I was studying and doing my degree, I was thinking at the time, you know what, I'm going to be a KOL, I'm going to be an influencer and go over there and do that, the videos and all that sort of stuff. But my passion lies in property, and fortunately I've got a family background in it as well. And it's a really exciting industry, and fortunately, two Chinese love property as well.
Yes.
So the past 10 years, my focus has been kind of on two things, which has been the media side. So I've done a couple of Chinese TV shows, which have been an incredible experience. One of which is the Chinese Bridge Competition, which I touched on earlier. You know, 120 people from around the world representing your country. People get knocked out, and then in the end, we made it to, I think it was top six or top seven people. Da Shan was the host.
Oh, Mark.
Mark is
Da Shan himself.
One of the OGs in terms of, I guess, Chinese, foreigners speaking, really good Chinese in the air, and meeting him too, going, wow, okay, cool. And so there was that show. I went on a Chinese date show, which in English, I think the name is If You Are the One. And so that's with Meng Fei. And I felt the TV shows have always been the biggest challenge for my language. The first one was post-accident. So it was just how close it was to coming out of the accident and just the opportunity to use my second language, which at that time was kind of like my first language. And then after that, the Chinese date show, I felt, look, at the time when I went on, I was single and I was thinking, you know what, if I can meet my future partner on this show, isn't that great? If I don't, okay, well, I get to meet Meng Fei, who is, for our listeners, he's a bald host who hosts arguably probably the biggest date show in the world. And I could meet him, and I guess if I'm able to survive getting up on stage in front of 24 women who bombard you with questions from left and all over... I can sing a song in Chinese on guitar. I can do some poetry. Then I can survive anything.
Yeah, that's daring even doing it in English, so much less Chinese. Good heavens. So what was that experience like? Tell us about that.
If anyone's watched the show, in a nutshell, there's 24 women on stage. A guy comes out one at a time, and you're out on stage probably for about an hour and a half, and the girls get to ask all sorts of questions. And you need to sell yourself.
Are these pre-prepared questions? Like, you might know where they are?
No. You just come out there. I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
Genuinely, I had no idea going out there. I had no idea of the people that were going to be on the show. And so I knew that I was going to play guitar and that I was going to sing a song because I was thinking, I've only got so much time.
Yeah.
So I've got to really, really let it rip. And I taught them how to do a Tim Tam Slam, which I think it's an Australian biscuit originally.
Cookie for all you Westerners out there.
That's right. Yeah, a cookie, but like a really good one as well. And I'm not sponsored by Tim Tam or anything, but these things are absolutely delicious. So I got some Chinese green tea and I thought, well, that could be like an Australia-Chinese combination.
Tim Tam Slam with green tea? Wow.
Yeah, it's actually really good.
I do like hot chocolate because, you know, like it melts everything.
It's really nice. Great. Sometimes some people find that a little bit too chocolatey. And then a lot of Chinese people are lactose intolerant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I thought maybe the safe side is to do Chinese tea and then Australian biscuit. And that might be showing I might be Australian, but I want to be engaged with China. So I survived that. You go out there, they all have lights. And if they like you, they're going to leave their light on for you.
Oh.
If they really like you, then one of them can give you like, I guess the equivalent of a super like.
Mm.
And that means they're going to be there till the end. And then at the very end, hopefully you've got some lights on from the girls. And then you can leave on three, as well as if anyone gave you a super like. Now, some people are really fortunate and they have lots of lights left on the end. And then the guy goes around, you can turn off a couple of the lights and you get the three or four girls at the end. Some people aren't lucky. You know, they play really depressing music when you're walking out. They do a close-up of your shot if you don't get the girl.
Walk of shame.
Yeah. And the time when we did it, we filmed 10 guys in one day. So it was a really long day.
Wow.
And I was the fourth out. The three guys before me didn't get a girl. So I was walking out. Here we go.
Are they all the same girls or is like a
all
new...
All the same girls, yeah.
Okay, all right.
And then if one gets picked, they replace one of the girls. And you come down in this little... escalator thing, but it comes down from the top and it's like, can you feel it? Dun, 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 dun. You go down the your lift and you try and look really cool and suave and then walk out. And so I was lucky and one of the girls gave me a super like and I ended up picking her in the end. Now we dated for one date and then realized that we're not really right for each other, but
it would make great TV.
Yes, that's it. But in terms of all the people that went on the show, we were all single and it's all genuine, the show, in a sense. I'm sure some people do it because they want followers and stuff. But look, it was a really great experience and I felt at the time that's a really good challenge for my Chinese. And then the next level was there's a show in China called Informal Talks. Now, Informal Talks, it's got 10 guys and now it's got girls and guys. But the show when I went on, it had 10 guys, representatives from around the world. I was representing Australia. There was a guy from South Africa, a guy from Japan, a guy from Russia, a guy from Argentina, and we debate topics which are interesting and current, generally for Chinese youth. And so it's a super show because we sit around a table and we do challenges, and it's like that Asian TV show thing too, with lots of things bouncing up on the screen. But
yeah,
what's so good about the show is that they don't necessarily find the person with the absolute best Chinese or the person that's the absolute best looking or something. They find people with unique stories which create conversation. And so my story going on the show was I had the background, of course, with Chinese, but also too, I'm coming from a family of property and growing up all around property and having the pressure of becoming a property developer and that kind of stuff. And that worked really well with the show too as well. But everything we say on the show are genuine stories. And that's what I was really impressed with, because people think it's all just for the cameras, but all these stories are absolutely genuine. And the followers of the show are really loyal. And the people that go on the show is like, they're some of the closest friendships that you make just because you're in the show and you'd understand with show business sort of stuff. You're filming from seven till who knows what time in the middle of the night. That, and that's a long-term thing. So you film a whole season of 10 episodes or something.
There's someone out there listening to this podcast and like, hey, look, I've got some pretty decent Chinese. You know, I feel like I could hold my own in a setting like this. How does one even go about getting on these types of shows?
A lot of it is, you know, who you know and getting the first opportunity. And that's what's happened with me is all my opportunities came from really one thing. And the first thing was I did this little Chinese talk show in Melbourne. And then someone saw that and then asked me, hey, do you want to take part in this Chinese bridge competition? I won that one. I was able to go over to China. And then after doing that show, then I met someone from a TV station in Australia who was involved in doing the Australian broadcasting of the date show. And they said, hey, this is coming up. Do you want to audition for it? And like any sort of thing, you've just got to throw yourself hard in. And it's not easy to get in and to onto these shows. However, it's never been easier to create content yourself.
Yeah.
And so if you've got some sort of passion, and you don't necessarily need to have the best Chinese either to do this. I know lots of people that are Chinese KOLs or influencers, and they don't have the best Chinese, but they're really dedicated to creating content. And so they do it every single day and they get a follower base. And then from that follower base, then shows are going to reach out to you. But I'd encourage just anyone that is interested in Chinese TV shows and the like is just download TikTok or download, I think Xiaohongshu, these Chinese Red, and just create content every single day if there's something that you're really passionate about, because it'll lead to opportunities.
The big TV show, that's something you work towards, right?
Yeah, I think, and opportunities will come. I did another one called, I think the English name is Viva La Romance, but in a nutshell, it's got five Chinese superstars, actresses, and they go traveling overseas, and their husbands watch the videos back at home and comment about their wives traveling around the world or whatever. And they came to Australia, and so I was like the Australian host.
Oh, cool.
And so I was taking the lead actress from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was on it. Taking them around there, I was going, wow, this is so cool. I watched this movie ages ago. And now you get the opportunity to meet these sort of people and see them in the flesh. But with Chinese, particularly just given how big the country is, it's not just TV and social media. There's opportunities in so many different areas. Like I've met, Jared, you've probably interviewed half these people too as well, that they've opened, you know, fantastic restaurants in China, or they've started business in China. Some of them stay in China, some of them live there for a while, and then some of them come back, but the connection with China remains. And so for me, I haven't lived in mainland China for a long time, but I'm very involved in the local Chinese community here in Melbourne. And there's a lot of Chinese people or people of Chinese background in Melbourne.
Well, maybe you could talk about that a little bit, because, you know, this is something that a lot of people talk about, or they say, hey, it's one of the challenges in learning Chinese is I don't have someone to talk to, or they're interested in learning, but they're also interested in how does that integrate can maybe into their life or their career, things like that. So maybe you could share a bit about your perspective and your experience on that.
The most important thing when you're learning a second language is that you have some sort of exposure to someone who speaks it as their first language or speaks it really fluently, because then you're hearing from someone who's the best or really, really good at it. And it can be really difficult to find opportunities, particularly if you speak English, because a lot of the times Chinese people, they speak English, but they speak English better than your Chinese. So, you know, that can be a bit of a struggle. But at least in Melbourne and a lot of the major cities in the world, there will be a strong Chinese community. And at least in Melbourne, I connected with firstly was the student community here. And so there was the Chinese Culture Club and there was the Chinese debating team and the Chinese theater club. And I got involved in all those ones. And it was easier for me because my Chinese was at a level where it was almost better than a lot of the English of the Chinese here. So Chinese was the first mm-hmm. language that you go to. However, that doesn't mean even if you don't have fluent Chinese, you can't get a study buddy or someone that you practice your language with. And the importance of when you have this sort of buddy is that, and if you're okay with hard feedback, is to be brutal with me. Mm-hmm. So every time I make a mistake, tell me what that mistake is and help me correct it. And so for Chinese, it could be grammar, it could be the tone, it could be the way that you pronounce the word.
You bring up something, this is a tangential question. I want to get back to Chinese in your life and career, but when you're talking about your experience post this accident you had, you were speaking Chinese. I imagine that your reading level was probably not matching your oral level at that point. How was learning characters for you post-accident versus pre?
So a lot of people, I find when you're learning a language, your written and your reading will be better than your speaking. If you're not practicing the speaking every single day, particularly at the start. So my reading pre-accident was probably slightly better than my speaking, right? Just because that naturally you're reading stuff. But post it, I think when you read, often you're speaking to yourself in your head, right? And I think because I was always coming from a place of love, like I genuinely really like the language, like it's easy to learn something fast if you really enjoy doing it, is that I'm thinking about it 24/7. I'm waking up, I'm doing it. Literally, I'm getting every sort of Chinese content that I can get. I've got WeChat. I downloaded the WeChat app. So I'm typing and then, you know, that typing's pretty easy because it's pinyin. Pinyin to do ni hao, which is hello, you go N-I-H-A-O. And you don't even need to know how to write the characters. It actually kind of just tells you for it. And so after you do that, you get really fast. And I reckon I'm faster at typing in Chinese than I am in English. Everything that I was doing was all in with Chinese. So I'm reading on WeChat. I'm reading books and stuff. So very soon it caught up, I guess, to my speaking Chinese.
Oh, wow.
And I was always just trying to push to go forward because there would be, you know, the TV show or there's this opportunity. I opened a Chinese walking tour company in Melbourne at the time too as well, because I thought so many Chinese tourists come to Australia or come to Melbourne, but they might not have a local tour guide that's going to show them the local Melbourne experience. And so I did that for a couple of years when I was at university. And so that was like another route of practicing Chinese and meeting more Chinese people and being exposed to more Chinese accents, but also talking about something that you're very passionate about.
I kind of picture this in my mind. Your brain's almost like a sponge and it's just absorbing anything Chinese at this point.
Yeah. And this is with anything I think that you're passionate about. Like you can't get enough of it. And for me, because you know, they talk about getting up out of bed on the right side of bed or when waking up in the morning, don't look at your phone straight away, get into doing to what you want to do. Because I was waking up and the first thing that was in my head was Chinese, like that set the tone for the rest of the day. And I didn't have enough energy to be doing too much, but I could do the one unit of Chinese at university. I would hang out with the Chinese friends after, do some videos and that sort of stuff. So I might not have been improving it much else, but because all I was doing was Chinese.
Well, how does that compare to also to now? This was about 10 years ago, right? How do you feel like your brain has adjusted or how has that experience been? I mean, do you still wake up thinking in Chinese? I mean, I also recognize that now you've also achieved higher levels of proficiency in the language, of course. So maybe you could contrast that.
Well, I've had a very long and diverse journey post-accident. I was in Shanghai studying economics and business and stuff in Chinese for a year and studied very intensely too as well. I've been back and forth for the TV shows. When I was at university here, a lot of my classmates were Chinese. So this was my Bachelor of Commerce, my Master's of Property. Like a lot of my classmates were Chinese. And so naturally our common language is Chinese. And then post that, a lot of the work that I've done in the property scene. So at first I was a commercial real estate agent and I was in the team that focused on Chinese buyers and Chinese sellers. And so day to day was with Chinese. And now that I manage our family property investment and development business. And so a lot of just, again, the clients that we deal with are Chinese. On a day-to-day basis, I've always continued to be connected with the Chinese community and practice the language. It's just that I think probably my vocabulary has changed. So when I first went to China, like, I couldn't tell you one word in property, but I probably couldn't do that in English either. So It's more specialized now. And even with the TV shows and the social media stuff that I've done, you only can learn that through association or through hearing it firsthand. I'm in Melbourne, so I'm still speaking, hopefully through this podcast, people can hear that my English is okay. It's not too good, but it's not too bad.
It's pretty good. Like, yeah.
It's pretty advanced. But after the accident, I went to Shanghai. I had to do HSK6, you know, to be able to study with the locals there. So I studied really hard for that. And I think like any sort of test thing, you've got to push yourself to get to that certain level, but then you'll remember just the important bits. Like, could I pass HSK6 now? Hopefully, maybe, but it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
But in terms of the speaking stuff on a day-to-day basis, it's more speaking and WeChat in my friendship groups, in my social circles, and in my day-to-day work. That's kind of the areas that I use it the most.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Well, Ben, right now there's a bit of fraught relations between the West and China for a variety of reasons. But I'm curious from your perspective, with business and life, culture and everything, how do you see the importance of knowing Chinese, you know, in your personal life? And how do you see that developing into the future?
So in terms of relationships, China, Australia, China, the West and stuff, and I know there's lots of talk about, oh, it's nervous and there's a bit of tension and stuff. I can tell you from Melbourne, at least in terms of demand for Chinese international students coming to Melbourne to study or to Australia to study, for purchasing apartments in Australia, for general travel to Australia, like it's as strong as it's ever been. And as any Chinese person will tell you, China's been around for a long, long, long time. And going forward, at least for Australia, like our relationship with China is fundamental, particularly for an economic sense, because we export most of our natural resources to China. China is the top one or top two source of international students. So for our economy, it's really fundamental. But also too, part of our community. So in Melbourne, at least, Melbourne had a gold rush in 1951, 1952. For that sort of decade there, Victoria, which is the state where Melbourne is, the population was 25% Chinese.
Oh, really? Wow.
So a lot of people in Melbourne that look Chinese, they're more Australian, at least, than I am, because their ancestors came here earlier than me. And so, for at least for the Australian identity, China's been there since European settlers came to Australia, like very, very early. So it's extremely important, particularly too, because Chinese, when they come to Australia to study or to work, a lot of the time it's for the long term, and they invest not only resources and financially, they also invest a lot of time. They get involved with local communities. Like in Melbourne, at least, all over Australia, the Chinese community are really, really involved in all sorts of aspects of things. And they support a lot of the different things that are going on, be it festivals, be it social activities. And so getting back to your question in terms of how important is Chinese going forward, it's a good one because I get asked this sometimes and people say, oh, with ChatGPT and all these sort of apps now, do you even need to know Chinese? Don't you just get your phone, you just speak to it and then it'll translate it for you? But language is more than just the words. It's the ability to communicate. And it's the ability to connect with someone else. And I can say with absolute certainty that you'll hear this all the time, doing business in China, it's not just about the deal, you got to have the relationship first. And I don't think that's just China. I think that's Australian, that's all over the world. There's just different ways to say it. But in order to connect with someone, the ability to speak the language that they're comfortable with, to culturally understand them, and to have a laugh, and just to create those sort of connections, like there's no way that technology can replace that. It can help you being able to speak or be able to write or to type quicker, but the ability to connect with someone, language is really important. And there's never been a more important time to be learning Chinese. And in terms of Australia, and I'm not sure if US is the same, but there was a push for learning Chinese 6 or 7 years ago. I don't think that push is as strong as it once was. And that's probably by part a product of COVID and just the difficulty and even the tension which is going on. But it is really important because the more people that can speak Chinese and that can at least understand Chinese culture, that'll help bridge that bond and deal with some of the cultural disconnect which is going on.
Yeah.
And I think there's always going to be tensions, particularly with the US and China. Like they're two big fish in the sea. But the more people that can speak the language and understand the culture from where China's coming from, well then there's going to be more Chinese people understanding the US culture, and there's just going to be more opportunities for dialogue between the two.
no matter how good translation tools are, might help you with a connection, but oftentimes there's that lack in that connection. And I recall watching some videos of futurists talking to Havy about how technology is changing our lives and what the future might be, and talking about some very basic fundamental human wants, desires, and needs that haven't changed throughout history and anticipate that they're not going to change. And one of those core things is the need, the desire to connect with other humans.
Mm.
And so it's like no matter how good translation tools might be, think about this. Let's go back to that dating show experience, right? Let's say you were using a translation device, yeah. You know, and you were able to understand mostly perfectly, you know, it was so good a translation device. Is that so it's really going to sustain a long-term relationship or something?
Yeah.
And my answer is probably not.
Yeah, I'd say definitely not. There's no way, even if it was 100% real time, this comes down to the difficulty of Chinese to English and English to Chinese, that culturally they don't translate well.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, because there's concepts which are different between the two languages and the two cultures because they've been not connected with each other for thousands and thousands of years. But that's kind of the exciting part, and that's what I've always loved about it, is that they're not the same. And so I will never fully master the language or the culture because there's so much to it. And there's always new things that I can learn or new slang that I'm hearing, more historical stories. And part of my favorite pastimes was when I'd be traveling around China and I'd find an old grandpa and sit down and struggle to understand their dialect, but have a tea with them and hear the stories. And it's such a pleasure and such a wonderful experience to connect with someone culturally. And best feelings when you're speaking a second language is the first time that you understand a joke.
Yes, yes. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's...
And you laugh a lot harder than you normally would laugh in your own language because it's almost a relief. Well, the first time you can understand a joke, and then the second time where you can deliver a joke, which makes people laugh.
Yeah. Well, Ben, so what advice then would you give to someone who's learning Chinese right now?
So for someone that's learning Chinese in their own country, probably the most important thing I think is less is more, but be systematic about how you learn. Everyone's got a kind of a capacity about how much they can learn a day. Some people can learn 20 words. Some people just, they have got the brain for it. Some people can only do one. But start small first and maybe just focus on one word a day. And I'd encourage you, keep that word, make it your iPhone or your whatever phone you've got, screen background, so you keep kind of seeing the word. And then when you go out on your day-to-day business, if you've got that one word and you're going to work or you're going to university or you're going and doing whatever you want, you're always trying to learn that word. So you're going to create connections and you're not going to forget that word. And then when you're learning that, make sure you're getting the tones right. And then if you do get the opportunity, you want to put yourself in the environment where you're only hearing Chinese.
Mm.
And so that could be you go down to the local Chinatown. And the best thing to do is go find someone that's fairly old. Maybe they don't speak your own language very well. Or just tell them that you don't speak English if you're an English speaker. And force yourself to try and use that word or those two words that you're trying to use that day. And you'll learn. And then even better, if you do get the opportunity to actually go over to completely isolate yourself in the environment. So if you can go to China or you can go to an environment where it is just Chinese, even if it's for a week, for 2 weeks, for 6 months, for a year, the longer the better. And really try and just force yourself to think in that language. It's really important in Chinese that you think conceptually the right way, because Chinese is grammatically, it's fairly simple once you understand what the grammar is that you don't want to straight away always be translating a sentence into proper English. You kind of want to be translating in your head into Chinglish.
Yeah.
So that grammatically you're thinking in the same way that Chinese grammar is. I think that kind of accelerates those pathways to thinking naturally in Chinese rather than trying to translate into perfect English, just translating your head to Chinglish, and then at least you're going to start conceptually thinking in the right grammar of Chinese.
Well, Ben, that's great advice. I really appreciate sharing some of that. And that's good to hear from your perspective because you have a very different journey, I would say, to most. But it sounds like you've also taken those experiences and you've leveraged it for the better. So, Ben, if people want to find out more about you or see about some of your stuff that you've done, where can they go?
While it's really good to listen to someone whose first language is Chinese, sometimes it's also good just to listen to people that have learned Chinese or that it's not their first language because they're probably vocabulary is more simple, or at least they're talking about things that are relevant to you. But so if you want to challenge your Chinese, I do have a YouTube channel. If you're in China, I've got a Weibo and a Bilibili. But if you search Red Ru Ben, so red the color red, Ru is in kangaroo Ben,
Red Ru Ben,
then I've got a YouTube channel and all my videos are in Chinese. So it's good practice for your Chinese. And if you're interested in Australia, even better.
And you can put a link in the show notes sure. here. So if anyone wants to find Ben there on YouTube.
Thank you. And Jad, look, I really enjoyed being part of the show. I think what you're doing is fantastic. The more people that learn Chinese, the better. There's always another opportunity or an adventure that's been opened up. And the language and the culture and the people that I've met along the way has just been life-changing. So I'd encourage everyone to jump on the boat and give it a go.
Well, Ben, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story with us. It's been great. It's great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jared. See you later on. See you guys.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, scholar, partner, poet, sheriff, hero, coach, doula, author, and that one gal named Amber. Please subscribe to our podcast and share it with a friend. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. You can also reach out to us at mannercompanion.com or mannercompanion on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor for this episode is also me, Jared Turner. Kaiser's out this week. And interview editor is Dominic Edgley. And I'd like to thank our special guest, Ben McMahon. And of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Paston. See you next time.